It's hour one of Surratt and Merciano. Marianne is off, but business lunch is on till one. And we're joined by the national content editor for the Tribune's Media on Demand, Colin McMahon. Colin, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you.
I think, first off, let's talk about what you do with Blue Sky. What is that exactly?
So Blue Sky Innovation is our, relatively new. We started about a year ago. Blue Sky Innovation is the business vertical content home for all things about innovation in the city. We have stories about innovators and stories about innovation themes, a lot of content in there that's aimed at people who are starting out, startup entrepreneurs, but also people within legacy companies and bigger companies who are trying to innovate within their own place. So there may be stories there about people solving similar problems, inspirational stories, profiles, that kind of thing.
On that subject, there was an interesting event last night with well-known chef Rick Bayless talking about starting a business. You were there. We're going to hear a little bit of this. And in general, was his spin on this what applied to me getting going with a successful operation can apply to any business?
Yeah, I think that Rick talked a lot about the themes that that pervaded his success and how they do translate across different businesses. For me, the biggest takeaway was that you can have a passion for something, and obviously Rick had a passion for Mexican culture, for Mexican food, but to actually take that passion and turn it into a business that's successful, it's more than just the idea, it's more than just the emotion, it's about hard work, it's about study, it's about trying things, it's about planning.
Let's hear a little bit from Rick Bayless last night. Here he talks about hiring people in the restaurant, and I'm sure any business person can relate to the problems you have finding good help. Do we need to say anything more about this before we listen to it?
No, it's just that for him especially, it's somebody who can execute his vision because it's his name on the line. So that when he's looking to hire somebody, there's a lot at stake.
Usually when I hire, the first thing that I want to know is what's the last meal you made at home. That'll tell me about your real passion for food, because if you're what I would call a real chef, then you cook on your days off and you can't wait to cook on your days off. And maybe if you're cooking Mexican food professionally, you made this amazing Thai green curry over the weekend and you were super exciting. So I'll ask him, you know, what's the most exciting dish you've eaten? What is the most exciting dish you've made? You know, stuff like that. So I'm looking for that spark, something that I know is a spark in that person, because when the rubber hits the road in a kitchen, you have to get through it because you're passionate about what you're doing.
Rick Bayless, all you have to do is drive down Clark Street pretty much any time of the day or night, and people are lining up outside Topolobampo. And, of course, he's a big hit on PBS. But let's listen to him also talking about risk-taking, which is something that not everybody has the stomach for.
I want you to think through every detail of the risk and what it means. That's what I did when I invested my mother-in-law's and my mother's retirement plans into this restaurant. I want to think through every detail of it and my plan B in it. But if you're not taking risks, if you're a chef with me and you give me the same dish that you gave me before with a new little twist in it, then I don't really want to talk to you. I want to talk to somebody who's giving me something brand new that may fall flat on its face, but at least we tried something new. We've done something.
Frontera Grill in Topolobampo, a couple of great success stories. And it's kind of a family business with him, isn't it?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, his longtime business partner is his wife, Deanna. And Deanna's been there for since the beginning and was really the person who kind of put him up against the wall and said, how are we going to make this work?
Here he is talking about that.
I didn't know anyone that didn't have their own business growing up. Mm-hmm. And in those, the husbands and wives all worked together, and they all had different things to do. So when we opened our restaurant, I, of course, had come up through a restaurant that had a mother and father that worked together, and they had different responsibilities in the restaurant. So when I knew the only way that Deanna and I would survive is, number one, if we divided very clearly, and number two, if we respected each other to run our respective parts of the business.
Sorry, Marianne isn't here today to listen to all this. Who was in the audience for this last night?
Yeah, it's interesting. So we had, you know, we had a good turnout, a sold-out house. And at the beginning, I did ask people, so of all the people who came here, how many people came to hear Rick talk about business, and how many people came to hear Rick talk about food? And to our surprise, more people raised their hand on the business side than the food side.
Interesting. And it was at the Museum of Mexican Art, we should say.
That's right. And a great venue. You know, people got to visit the exhibits afterward. And, you know, Rick has had a relationship with that museum for a long time, so it all worked out very well.
All right, one more audio clip from last night, Rick Bayless talking about business, and in this case, talking about authenticity.
People call our restaurant, Frontera, authentic, and I say, well, it's authentic in spirit, but if you're talking about authentic as in museum-quality reproduction, then of course it's not, because first of all, the water is different here, the air it smells very different here, the people in the restaurant are speaking the wrong language, and they're not going to order it in the same way. We have learned the dish on its home turf, and hopefully we've learned it not just in a, you know, a quarter teaspoon of this and a half teaspoon of that, but we've learned it from in a spiritual kind of way. We understand what this dish is about, and what we turn out rings true. That's what authenticity is to me.
After he was done speaking, Colin, what was the discussion like? What was the feedback like in the room?
Yeah, it was interesting. People really did want to hear about his advice and his secrets for building a business. And he talked a lot about the fact that you can have this great idea and you can have this passion, but if you don't have the business sense, if you don't do the homework, then you're never going to make it work. And trying to find the balance between making a product as good as it can be, but also keeping in mind that you have to get revenue and you have to get people to buy it, because otherwise you're not going to have a business. That was the thing that people took away the most.
And he continues to expand. He continues to be a successful businessman and also a terrific performer on TV with his PBS show. What is it? Mexico One Plate at a Time.
Yeah, Mexico One Plate.
It's an odd combination for people. Usually you're either a performer and you're very creative, or you've got that math side of your brain going for business.
Right, and I think he enjoys the fact that he can do both. He will admit to hating some of the business side. He will admit to saying that some of that the numbers gets him down or is a pain, but he knows that he has to become familiar with it and become versed in it to make it work. So I think for him, the fact that he got a chance to talk about not just food but business last night was a real plus.
And you believed him when he said he doesn't like the business side?
Yeah, I think he likes the fact that he knows how to do it and he's conquered it.
Yeah.
But if he had a choice between cooking or doing the books, he'd take the kitchen.
Of course. Colin McMahon, it's Tribune and Blue Sky Innovation. Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Let's step into business class now, the business lunch hour. Johnny Jett, the proprietor of the johnnyjett.com website, one of the most comprehensive travel sites on the internet, joins us. How you doing, John? Where are you today?
Good. I'm in Los Angeles, but about to get on a plane and fly over you guys.
We'll say hello. We'll wave. You're always on the go. Do you know about this Airbnb operation? I was reading about this this week. I never heard of this, Airbnb, and apparently a lot of folks in the hotel business are nervous about it, aren't they?
Oh, they should be, but yeah, Airbnb has been around for a few years. The first time I ever used them was when I was going to London during the Olympics, and everything in the city sold out. So now the business travelers are joining in. Actually, I was at this convention that they released it. It's called the GBTA, Global Business Travel Association. It was in LA this year, and Airbnb had a booth for the first time, and they're there signing up big corporations because these guys, first of all, spend the big money and they have a lot of travelers. But a lot of their travelers want to stay in apartments and not in hotels, not only because it's cheaper, but because, you know, they have a kitchen, they have a washer and dryer, they get free Wi-Fi, and, you know, it just feels more like home.
And I saw that San Francisco now, they were in the news this week because they're getting hotel taxes now from Airbnb rentals.
They are. That's one of the big problems. Airbnb's had a few problems. One of them is that, you know, they're taking away business from the hotels and they're not getting taxed. So now San Francisco is the first city in the U.S. It's just started last week. They're getting 14% on 14% tax on stays fewer than 30 days or less. Hmm. So and what Airbnb's doing, you know, Airbnb has all kinds of properties, but for their business traveler section, they're not going after the ones that have shared properties, because you can look at Airbnb and you can go all over around the world. You can share a room or a house, and you can go for as little as like $14 if you want. But business travelers aren't into that, so they just took those all off the books, and they also took off the quirkier places like tree houses, which they have around the world, and boats and all kinds of stuff.
You travel around the world, Johnny, and you're well aware of the tighter airport screening because of Ebola. World's largest cruise line, Carnival, has changed the itineraries of a couple of ships that were scheduled to land in ports near West African countries. What have you noticed in your travels recently?
You know, I just got in from Hawaii, and there was a scare there. But I haven't noticed a lot, actually. I just think passengers are a little bit more freaked out. I see more passengers wiping down their seats with mm-hmm. antibacteria wipes. I do that. I've been doing that for years because I travel so much, and I try to make a conscious effort not to, you know, put my fingers near my mouth or my nose or my ears. Although, you know, it's difficult to catch Ebola. The only way you're going to catch it on the plane is if someone is right behind you or next to you. I think it's within 3 feet, and they're coughing all over you, and it gets into one of your pores or eyes.
Right,
or
and they have mouth. To be someone with symptoms of Ebola.
Exactly.
Actively.
So,
right.
You know, I've been traveling all around the world. I'm not nervous yet, but, you know, I've been carrying a mask in my bag. So because I've had that person sneezing or coughing without covering their mouth near me, and I carry two. I'll hand one of them to them and say, "Hey, what are you doing?" And or I'll ask the flight attendant to ask them, and they usually do. And actually, I one time I was flying to Australia, and the passenger would not put a mask on. So I put the mask on, and I just put my hood over my face, and I slept.
Hey, I put Purell on the phone when you call us, Johnny, so I'm not taking any chances.
I don't blame you.
The Transportation Security Administration's PreCheck program apparently is desperate for customers. I saw a thing in the Wall Street Journal about this. They're really pushing this because, they say, with the budget cuts, the TSA does not have enough screeners to reserve pre-check lanes only for pre-check passengers. So they direct passengers considered low risk, often based on age, sex, and destination, into pre-check lanes, hoping that a taste of the expedited screening will prompt them to pay the $85 application fee to enroll for 5 years. You're a big proponent of this pre-check program, aren't you?
I am. It's funny because I have this page open on my computer to read while I'm on the plane. Scott McCartney, a buddy of mine, wrote that story. So, you know, I've had problems with TSA PreCheck. First of all, you know, they charge $85 to get in. The secret, by the way, is you want to sign up for Global Entry instead. That costs $100. They're both good for 5 years, and it includes TSA PreCheck. So when you cross international boundaries or when you come back into America, you know, you don't have to wait in a long immigration line. So, you know, what they were doing is they were just letting rookies come in. And I had a feeling it was because they're just trying to let people see how good it is. It's kind of like an
introductory offer. Yeah.
It's like a drug dealer. They give you the drugs for free the first time, and then you're going to come back because you're going to be hooked.
I wouldn't know about that. Yeah, but that's exactly what they're trying to do. And again, the program you suggest folks sign up for is called what?
Global Entry. That's if you travel international at all. That way, when you go across the border, come back into America, you don't have to wait in these long lines. You can just go to a kiosk, and then it also includes TSA PreCheck.
Gotcha. Good advice, as always, from John. And if you go to johnnyjet.com, you'll find more on everything we talk about, and then some, whether it's air travel, hotels, anything travel-related. Happy, safe traveling, my friend. We will talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bob Surratt and the Business Lunch Hour. Marianne is off today. Scott Kleinberg is on. He's the nationally syndicated columnist and social media editor at the Chicago Tribune. Good to see you as always, Scott.
Great to see you, Bob.
And let's put up the graphic immediately. Breaking social media news. What's happening with Snapchat?
Well, it's an anonymous service that a lot of people use to send photos. And apparently tens of thousands of photos have been taken from the site and are now in what are probably some pretty bad hands. So we're waiting to find out.
Is this like the celebrity photo leak?
It's something like that, except Snapchat is so different because so many people use it. A lot of young people use it. And normally it's just a fun thing where you post a selfie, you put some writing on top of it, and kids love to send this stuff back and forth. And there are ways that you can use Snapchat that violate the terms of service where you use a third party and it uploads photos. It's apparently this third party that was the result of the hack that caused all of these photos to disappear.
So if you use Snapchat, be careful out there this weekend.
Absolutely, yes.
I love this radio story about the station that changed formats.
Yes.
And this is trending on Twitter, isn't it?
Yes, it is trending right now. It's an all-new station in Houston. It's been on the air since 2011. And this morning, they abruptly went off the air and they switched their format to All Beyonce All the Time.
But this is just to get attention, isn't it?
Well,
are they really going to stay with this?
That's what they seem to be talking about. They're actually changing the name from News 92 to B92 to go along with Beyonce. Whether or not it's actually true and actually going to be sustainable, I don't know. The thing about Beyonce is, well, she is from Houston, so it kind of makes sense in that case. But she only has 5 albums.
Yeah, so, exactly like Elvis.
Yeah, exactly. So
unless, the Beatles.
Exactly. So unless people like to hear the same song over and over again, who knows how long that can be sustained?
Mark my words, that's an old trick. They're not going to end up playing All Beyonce, but it's working.
Yeah, so far it's working.
In New York City, there's going to be a new store, and it's Amazon. Does this mean they're going to be coming to Chicago?
You know, I don't know that yet. And right now, Amazon is saying nothing about this, actually. They're just not talking about it. But the Wall Street Journal is reporting that Amazon's going to open a store directly across from the Empire State Building, specifically to handle local orders, same-day delivery in the city, and to handle online orders and returns and those types of things. I think one of the examples they cited was you'd be able to go in the morning, order a pan, and then pick it up in the evening and go home and cook with your pan, which sounds like a great thing to do. You could also go into any other store and do that and bring it back to work with you. But, you know, if you're a big Amazon fan, that could be a huge thing.
The Amazon brand.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I wanted to ask you about a new survey that I saw recently, and you probably know all about this, but it was very interesting. Basically, the bottom line in this was kids are over Facebook. I guess they looked at teenagers, let's see, between the spring of 2014 till this fall, about 7,000 students. Mm-hmm. And let's see, the number of kids on Facebook plummeted from 72% to just 45%.
Yes. And actually, you know, it was surprising in the beginning when we heard that. Kids really, really like Facebook to begin with. But I know whatever you read, I know the problem with Facebook. Kids' parents are on Facebook. Kids do not want to be where their parents are when it comes to social media.
Yeah.
And I really, really think that that is having something to do with it. Not to mention the fact that all of these anonymous types of things like Snapchat are really where kids want to be these days. They really like to be able to talk without people knowing, you know, that they're talking about themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. This survey also indicated that by 2019, these teens would watch all their movies on Netflix.
Oh, I absolutely believe that. I mean, I think cable networks have to be looking at this and saying, what are we going to do about this? For sure.
By the way, do you know anything about the report that was in the New York Times this week that Facebook's working on an anonymous standalone messaging app?
Yes, actually, to go along with what we were just talking about with this whole anonymity thing, yeah, there's talk about them starting their own app. And the thing is, Facebook has always been about you have to tell us who you are. There was this recent flap that happened this week where they announced that it was okay to use a name other than your own name. Now this goes completely across the spectrum, but this has to be in response to kids. This has to be in response to a lower audience there, because if you can have the best both worlds. You can have your Facebook, but do it in a way where no one knows who you are and make it separate on your phone. I think that is something that could do really well. So right now, Facebook isn't confirming. Facebook never confirms these types of things. They're just kind of test until then. Mm-hmm. But I can see it happening. I can see why they would do it.
Yeah, you're the guy who knows. Scott Kleinberg's his name. Social media is his game. Have a good weekend. Thanks,
you
Scott.
Too, Bob.
Talk
Thanks
to you
so
next
much.
Week. A few days ago, going through the Sun Times, I see a picture of a very young man up on a ladder in front of a marquee that says the Chicago International Film Festival, and it's the founder of the festival, Michael Kutza, and it's the 50th anniversary. Can you believe it?
Can you believe it?
No, I can't.
To me, I just keep saying it's just a number. I don't get it. I don't get it.
It's an amazing accomplishment. Do you remember that first year? Do you remember it being a struggle?
I absolutely remember the first year because at the first year in 1965, we had Stanley Kramer, Betty Davis, King Vidor, all these cool people of the film business, and we had no audience because nobody wanted to come and see foreign films.
Things are a lot different now,
changed,
and whether you want to see foreign films or you want to see new domestic releases or documentaries, the film festival is the place to be.
Right.
And Michael, for folks who have never gone and want to see some good movies now, what's the best way they can sort of look at a program and get some tickets?
The fastest thing is ChicagoFilmFestival.com. Everything is online, and even tickets. But the coolest thing about the film festival is, yes, it's 50 years old, but it has something for everyone. So if you want to see a Oscar-contending film that might come out in November or December, and we may be showing it at the festival, you can see it first. If you want to see a great film from over 60 countries, you can see it with us, and you meet the directors. That's the cool thing. We have the directors and the stars at the theater to deal with the audiences. So you can, if you're from Romania, you can meet a great Romanian director, let's say, or something. It's really nice. And Oliver Stone, a lot of cool people are coming back. I keep saying cool.
Yeah, no, they are. And I love that you feature great films from the past. As a matter of fact, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is playing coming up, isn't it?
Yeah, next week. Because we premiered it back in 1975 everybody was here for it. We thought we would do the anniversary and have some folks come back via film or live. When I said Oliver Stone, because a lot of directors started with us, so I invited them back and to show their first film or a new film. And Oliver, if you're an Oliver Stone, you know, fan, he's fun. I said, Oliver, you got to come back. He said, yeah, I know. You showed my student film. Well, you're not going to show that again, I guarantee you. He said, I'll bring back a new cut of National Born Killers because we shot it in Chicago. And I'll bring back a new cut of Alexander, which I've been working on over and over again for like 10 years.
After all these years, it's been such a great boon to the city. And do you find now that it's easier to get folks to come in, directors, stars?
Absolutely. Well, they love Chicago. They fall in love with the city. They see it as a new great place to make a movie. And tell, you know, how many, we must have 5 or 6 TV shows being shot here right now. And features, weather permitting, they like to shoot features here too.
Back in the early days, I remember the Film Fest was spread out. Now everything's at River East 21, isn't it?
Yes, we tried spreading it out. We tried Hyde Park, Oak Park, Evanston, Highland Park, but we found that putting it in one location is easier for everyone. So if you miss a film at 7 o'clock, you can catch another one at 9, and it works under one place. It keeps our celebrities easier to handle and the audiences.
You know what you got to do again? You got to show the commercials from around
the
world. Are you doing that now?
Absolutely.
That was always one of my favorites.
Yeah, we do. We have a competition just for TV commercials. But we have a whole festival now devoted to that. That's in April.
Right. But you still make the commercials part of this film festival.
We try to. It's a little bit more difficult, but we do keep it as a separate festival now. Yeah. Thank you for reminding me that, because we used to love doing it at the festival. Yeah.
I think seeing the commercials was a highlight for me over the years. Also seeing a great print of Citizen Kane at the festival.
And good film on Orson Welles this year, too. It's funny you should mention that. We have a new documentary called The Magician, and it is one of the best I've ever seen about Orson Welles, who's from Chicago.
Mm-hmm, right.
And his life, he did so much of it here in Chicago.
I can't remember who was speaking, though, at the screening of Citizen Kane that I went to, but it was fascinating to hear about some of these little...
It could have been Roger Ebert.
You know,
it may have been.
It may have been. He talked about how Welles was using the set that had been used for some other movie and loved a couple of pieces from movies that had been done there and just stuck them in Citizen Kane, and he said, watch for it, and
He's only 24 years old, imagine. But back to TV commercials, you mentioned, so when I started this festival, to put it all together in 64 and get this board together, and had a lot of advertising agency guys, and one was named Leo Burnett. I don't know if that means anything to anybody, but
yeah, I think so.
Leo Burnett was on the board. He was an older man. I was a kid, and he said, you know, if you're going to do a film festival, you've got to show TV commercials. And I said, why? And he said, well, first of all, our films, our 60-second films, take more work, more time, and more creative energy than a lot of these feature films you're going to show. And of course, he's right. The ingenuity of that 60 seconds, now they're down to 10 seconds.
Yeah,
Leo Burnett, and that's why we've made a competition for commercials, because of Leo Burnett.
And they're more expensive and elaborately produced
than
ever. When you were a kid going to Weber High School, did you think...
It's gone now. It's gone.
It's gone.
When I was from Austin. That's gone, too. It's
but
gone.
Did
My
you,
God, I'm still
did,
here.
Did you back then dream about being in the movie business somehow?
I was making movies at Weber High School. You know.
When are we going to see that at the film festival?
Recruitment films.
Let's see those.
God, you don't want to see that stuff. Actually, I'm proud of everything I've ever done in life, you know.
Well,
I may have killed my folks by not becoming a doctor, but I got away with murder.
You should be very proud of where the film festivals come and how much it means not only to the city, but internationally to the film community. 50th anniversary, and as Michael says, if you just go to chicagofilmfestival.com, it's
you
all there.
You can find everything you want.
Look forward to it. How long is it run now?
Until the 23rd of October. And there's free films right here in the middle, right out your window, Bob. Mm-hmm. We're showing free films every night made in Chicago. So we showed The Fugitive last night. We had Andy Davis here, the director of it, and something every night out there.
Right here at Pioneer Court next to the Tribune Tower, and the screen that you've got, it is amazing looking.
Even in the daytime, you see
It's something.
Why is this called Pioneer Court, by the way? I've never asked anybody that. I bet you don't know.
Because I'm a radio pioneer.
Got it.
Michael Kutza, Chicago Film Festival.
Thank
Always
you.
Good to see you.
Thank you, Bob.